We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Talk about box office stuff. The game of women's basketball continues to explode nationally. A record weekend TV-wise, the stars, the games not only managed to largely live up to the incredibly high expectations, exceeded the unprecedented hype, and now it concludes with a star-studded Final Four weekend in Cleveland. South Carolina, NC State, Iowa, UConn, the teams left to play for a national championship. Welcome to the latest Gower Hour presented by the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame. I'm Rob Joyce. She's Her Hoop Stats, Megan Gower. Megan, you were in Albany last weekend, so you tell us, I mean, best weekend for the sport in a long, long time, it feels like.
Yeah, the atmosphere in Albany, it was incredible, especially on Monday night, but I thought really all weekend. Like, there was a lot of fans in town, a lot of great basketball. It was a lot of fun.
I know, especially Rebecca Lobo had the comment, which kind of exploded on Monday about there's nothing to do in Albany, but, and heck, last week on the pod, you said there's nothing to do in Albany. Still, sell out the entire weekend, I think, across all the games, sell out all across in Portland. Did it live up to everything you expected? Did it exceed it?
Yeah, I think it lived up to everything I expected. Might have exceeded it. I thought the game, especially Monday night's game, was just like, I think that game had big shoes to fill with all the hype that went around it. And I think it did that.
Yeah, 45-45 at the half. Not a whole lot of late game drama, but still entertaining throughout. So here's the rundown. We'll recap all of the Sweet 16 Elite Eight games, do some postmortems on some of these teams that seasons came to an end either on Monday or over the weekend. We have to talk about the latest big change in the coaching world. Tennessee lets go of Kelly Harper, which we questioned last week. I threw it out there, and Danny White must listen. Thanks for listening, Danny. And then we will talk about the Final Four preview and not only the games in the semifinals, but the four potential games that we could get in the championship. So you were in Albany, so we'll start there. And obviously, frankly, even if you were in Portland, we'd probably start in Albany because everyone, 12.3 million people, watched Iowa defeat LSU and exact a little bit of revenge from last year's national championship game. Most hyped game in a very long time, maybe ever, for the women's game, especially considering it was the Elite Eight. Right out of the gates, phenomenal from the start, and kind of the kind of game that if you're a neutral, you kind of needed to see from a growing the game perspective of, you know, if this was a replica of UConn Duke, be like, oh, well, women's basketball, they don't make shots, yada, yada, yada. Not the case on Monday.
Yeah, a really high-powered offensive game, especially in that first half. It felt like it was offense really driving the game, which made it a lot of fun to watch, obviously. Defense is always good, but offense is more fun to watch.
Were you courtside?
Basically, like second row courtside, so close enough.
You've seen them both in their element. I mean, you saw them in the national championship game last year. You weren't courtside for the championship game though, last year.
No.
So up close and personal, what's it like to see on one side Caitlin Clark do her thing, especially the way she did it, And then on the other side, before she got hurt, Angel Reese do hers.
Yeah, I mean, just really incredible to watch. I mean, Kayla Clark is just, I mean, I know this from watching her on TV, and I've seen her in person in the Final Four last year, but, like, will literally just pull up from anywhere, and it just, you feel like it's going in anyways. And I think that's just really incredible to experience in person and not just, you know, through your TV screen. And then Angel Reese too, just her presence down low is really impressive, and her ability to dominate the paint before she got hurt in that game. I mean, every time it felt like she touched the ball for LSU, they were getting a basket.
On the Iowa side, well, I guess not really the Iowa side. A lot of criticism of the way Kim Mulkey game plans defensively to guard Clark and Iowa. A lot of criticism towards Haley Van Lith, who was apparently sick on an IV. I don't know if that day or earlier in the week, but not 100% health-wise. When Caitlin, give me your thoughts on the defensive plan as a whole, because part of me is saying, sure, criticize it, but also if Clark is on like that, what do you want anyone to do that isn't, I don't know, Tamika Catchings?
Yeah, I didn't like the defensive game plan. Not because Clark went off, though, because I think Gino said it yesterday, like he tried to call the coach that like has stopped Iowa, no one's picking up, or has stopped Caitlin Clark, no one's picking up the phone, right? Like you're probably not going to stop her, and you're going to do your best to limit her, but I think the key to beating Iowa is probably to limit everyone else, and I think there were lapses in LSU's defensive game plan in that regard. I felt like people were able to get loose in the paint pretty easily. Kate Martin had a lot of great shots in the paint. Sydney Affleter, who had a great weekend and has had a great tournament so far, was able to get open. So those were the defensive lapses that bothered me more, I think, was that type of stuff. And then also that they just made no adjustments, right? Like clearly Van Lith and Clark wasn't working. I'm not saying someone else on Clark would have worked, but try something else when it doesn't work.
Interesting that, like, obviously Flauje Johnson battled foul trouble. Mm-hmm. She's a little quicker, a little more length to her than Haley Van Lith. And then with what, like 4 minutes to go, she made that switch. It's like, well, by that point, they were down like 10, whatever it was. It's like, you're probably not going to win. I thought it was too little too late. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, like, sure, I get what happens if your best player all tournament, Flauje Johnson, fouls out with 9 minutes to go or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. On the flip side, like, what's the point in waiting if your season's going to end? Kate Martin, great. 16 after halftime. You mentioned it. You know, it's one thing if Kate Martin goes out and makes like 5 wide open threes. Mm-hmm. They weren't wide open threes. They were largely inside. And then, yeah, Falter was great. She had 16 as well. LSU side of things. How do you look at this season as a whole for the Tigers? Preseason number one, defending national champions, made it to the Elite Eight, lost in a phenomenal game. You know, not like they got blown out. So how do you evaluate big picture of the Tiger season?
Yeah, I mean, I think it doesn't quite live up to what the expectations were in the preseason. Obviously, they were favorites to repeat coming into the season and had all these huge kind of transfer pieces in Anissa Morrow and Haley Van Lith. But I still feel like that's a good season, right? Like, you make it to the Elite Eight, only 4 teams are going any further than that. So it doesn't feel like they fall that short, in my opinion. Like, you still made it pretty far. And I think we're seeing, obviously, in these, you know, especially in the Albany 2 region, like, I think you had 3 teams that easily could have been in the Final Four if they were placed in a different region.
Yeah, there are very few programs that would probably consider this year a disappointment. LSU probably fits that, might toe the line a little bit, but I think it fits it. All that talent in the starting lineup, mm-hmm. very, very thin, though, and it never seemed to click, which almost makes it impressive that they made the Elite Eight to begin with. It never seemed fully there. However, I mean, if you ask an LSU fan today, sure, it's a disappointment. But also, if I gave you the option of you make back-to-back Final Fours and lose both, or you lose in the Elite Eight, but you win it all the year before, like, you take that 10 times out of 10. You know, that banner will hang forever in the
field. Exactly.
Questions now for them. Angel Reese has not announced as of our recording on Wednesday morning what she plans to do. She said she'll tell Kim Mulkey first and then announce it. I think she goes. Haley Van Lith, I know nothing, just based on my armchair psychology of watching Kim Mulkey's press conference. It sounds like Van Lith won't come back.
Yeah, I'm interested to see if she goes to W or goes somewhere else, honestly.
Her stock tanked.
Yeah, exactly. Like, she's had a rough season, and I wouldn't be surprised to see if she tries to land somewhere else or stay at LSU, one of the two, depending on how things are going to shake out, and kind of fix her stock a little bit to go to the W.
But still, like, assuming if those two are gone, a base of Morrow, Flage, and Michaela Williams, that's a perfectly fine base on top of whatever recruits I'm sure they have coming in. Like, they'll be back. They'll be fine.
And they already signed, I think, Arkansas's Jersey Wolfenbarger out of the transfer portal.
Yeah, former five-star who just never clicked in Fayetteville.
Yeah.
And I guess we have to mention that all much ado about nothing for this Kim Mulkey story that came out 3 hours before the Sweet 16. Well-written story, fine, whatever. There was no new information. If you love Kim Mulkey, nothing will change that. If you hate Kim Mulkey, like, nothing new came out of that.
Right.
I'm glad we all wasted a week of our times for
for that.
A fine profile.
Yeah. You know, it
wasn't bad journalism at any way, but what you do about nothing.
I'm sure Mulkey's rant about it sold some extra subscriptions to the Washington Post, so I guess good for them.
Sweet 16, we don't have to talk about the games too much per se. Iowa, Colorado, the Buffs were never really in it that much. Now a tipping point, I think, for Colorado, not a tipping point, but change coming for the Buffaloes off consecutive Sweet 16 appearances. They got up to second in the polls for a bit before they faded in the final 6 weeks or so. So now, you know, it's not easy to have Sweet 16 quality seasons. It's harder to maintain getting to the Sweet 16 every year. Jalen Sherrod is gone. Is Quay Miller gone?
I think so. I think she's a fifth year, too.
Maddie Nolan's gone. Freda Foreman can come back. I think she can come back. Erinette Vonleh will be back as a senior, but you're looking at potentially replacing four starters. And now for J.R. Payne, who's been linked to some other jobs outside of Boulder, like, can Colorado keep this standard as they move to the Big 12 next year? A league that certainly it's easier than the Pac-12.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how the offseason plays out for them. I think right now they probably don't have quite enough coming back to stay at that level, so they've got to, one, keep your coach. That's the most important thing, because lots of dominoes tend to fall when that change happens. But beyond that, what they're going to get in the portal and things like that is probably going to shape what this team looks like next year.
And then a very sad for Megan postmortem on her UCLA Bruins. Mm-hmm. Another game that, frankly, it lived up to the hype. Bruins didn't shoot their way out of a freaking paper bag in the first half, but they kind of hung around. When they made that run in the third quarter to take a lead, I didn't think it was over, but I thought, okay, like, UCLA has overcome their woeful shooting. They probably win. They're up 3 with 3 minutes left, and then the wheels fell off. LSU a 14-2 run to close. And that's that. And quickly, we'll mention Flage Johnson, I thought, was the best player for LSU in the tournament. She was great.
Agreed. Absolutely. I thought she was the best player on the floor in that game, which I got a little hate on Twitter for that, for not saying Lauren Betts, but I mean, which team won? So I'll just leave it at that.
Betts wasn't bad. She had 17 rebounds.
She was great, but 14 points. She was great. Flage was the best player on the floor in that game.
Yeah. I know Angel had monster numbers too, but she's very inefficient offensively the whole tournament. Part of that, I think, on Monday was pre-injury, she was like 6 of 8. After that, she was one of 12 or whatever.
Yeah.
Hard to look for me at anything other than a disappointment for UCLA this season.
Yeah, I feel like this team was set up to go to the Final Four this year, right? Like, you had, obviously, a ton of these pieces are coming back, but you had this stellar sophomore class. You add Lauren Betts, but then you kept Charisma Osborne, so you had that kind of senior leadership that you, I feel like, usually need to get that far. It's hard to get that far with a really young team, but they don't quite get to that program's first Final Four coming out in the Sweet 16. I think the same place that they left the tournament last year to South Carolina is, I think, a disappointment for the squad.
Yeah, I mean, not all Sweet 16s are built the same. Last year, a bunch of freshmen and Charisma Osborne lost to, at that point, the best team in the country. It's like, oh, yeah, that's like great stepping stone. Yeah. They'll be back. And to not, like, they built upon it, but at the end of the day, the end result is the same. So that's got to be disappointing. They were just inefficient on offense in the game, and they were very reliant on the three ball, which I
which is not something that they've been great at this season, I would say. Like, that's not their strong suit. Yeah, I thought there was just too much trying. Three is, like, early in the shot clock, too, not like you've used the whole shot clock and you got to get something up, like, early in the shot clock when you haven't, Lauren Betts hasn't even touched the ball inside.
Yeah. So the one sentence summation of Albany 2, Hawkeye haters were saying it's Caitlin Clark and a bunch of nobodies, and they had the allegedly hardest road, well, certainly the best 2 and 3 seeds in their region. They're back to the Final Four. Megan, were you still among those haters technically?
Probably technically. I didn't think that Iowa would come out of this region, but I also wouldn't have been shocked to see Iowa come out of this region.
So last year you were surprised that they came out, and then you learned your lesson. And
right.
Well, we all learned our lesson.
When Clark has 41-12 in the Elite Eight, that's hard to beat round two.
Yeah. So Iowa, second straight year, third time ever in the Final Four. We'll stay in Albany since you were there. Other side of the bracket, the number one overall seed, South Carolina. It was dicey. There are a couple of games that it looked like. We'll start with the Elite Eight game, which not as drastic as the Sweet 16, but kind of similar. Like, seemed like the whole time the Gamecocks were in control. They'd win somewhat comfortably. Oregon State would make a run. South Carolina wouldn't quite let the comeback happen. And here we are, Gamecocks undefeated again, going to Cleveland.
Yeah, I felt like in that Elite Eight game, even though it was like pretty close most of the way through, it just like really never felt like Oregon State was going to win it. It felt almost a little anticlimactic, honestly, when South Carolina went to the Final Four, because it was just like, well, this is obviously the expectation. And then the game never really felt like it was going to end a different way.
That's the challenge with these. So like, I called the SEC championship game, and there was obviously a brawl with 2 minutes to go.
Right.
And then your final call, it's supposed to be like, they win the SEC. And it's like, well, for South Carolina.
Yeah.
They won
the expectation. Right.
Right. It's like, you know, UConn, like, hey, especially when they were in the American, it's like UConn won the American.
Shocker.
Oh boy. Yeah. I mean, South Carolina, it's a credit to the program that they've become where it's like, yeah, we're supposed to be here.
Mm-hmm.
This is supposed to be the case of what happens. And, you know, it's they're dancing and you're cutting down the nets and it's great. But especially after last year, being undefeated, they know better than anyone. Going to the Final Four undefeated doesn't mean a whole lot if you don't win at all. Tessa Johnson, I think, has been enlightening in the postseason. She played 14, 15 minutes a game prior to the SEC tournament. But since then, her minutes have gone up a little bit, but it's not the number of minutes, it's when. Like, she's on the floor in these late game scenarios, which just another shooter for a Gamecock team that, like, Pau Pau has been okay from three in this tournament. Bree Hall hasn't really done a whole lot offensively for a while now, and Tessa Johnson has slid right in, and that's just another weapon.
Yeah, I think that was the biggest takeaway for me with South Carolina in this weekend was just their depth and the fact that when something's not working from one of their starters, they have four other great players that they can slate in, five other great players they can slate in to make up for that. Like Ashlyn Watkins, for example, was fantastic in that Oregon State game, came in and made a big impact off the bench. So I think they just have so many options that when one doesn't work, there's something else that will.
Yeah, a starter, though, who is, again, not necessarily how many, but when. It's the Raven Johnson redemption story continues. The big three against Indiana. A lot has been made of her story of, you know, the team. Iowa was sagging off of her last year. There's the video of Caitlin Clark, like, she has the ball, like, shooing her away. And she's, every time the ball's in her hand in a big moment and the shot goes up, it's like, oh, she's one of two shooting today, but you just trust that it's going in.
Yeah, that one against Indiana was huge because I think that game was a little bit more interesting that you were like, oh, are they going to lose here? Not that you really thought they were going to, but there was quite the comeback from Indiana. And then I think she had one or two shots too in the Oregon State game that were just well-timed, like Oregon State's on a run, and it kind of just, you know, quieted that.
I have a confession to make about that Sweet 16 game. So I was traveling over the weekend. I was visiting family for Easter weekend. At halftime, when it was a 17-point South Carolina lead, I turned the game off because we had to do what we had to do. I get back to my father-in-law's. I check the phone midway through the third. It's 61-40. I'm like, great. Not missing anything. Start the bedtime routine with our two-year-old, and then like 25 minutes later, I'm starting to get texts. Like, what do you mean it's a single-digit game?
Yeah.
So I miss most of the comeback, and I turn it on. It's like, oh, holy crap. It's like a 4-point game. Like, what happened? Yeah. So, yeah, that's my bad. But, I mean, hey, it's, you know, it's the weekend. You got to pick and choose. There's a lot of basketball to watch.
I mean, I'll also confess that it was like a 20-point game, and I was like, okay, this is over, and started working on my like preview I needed to write for UConn, and then looked up and was like, oh, I should start paying attention here again.
Yeah, and yeah, that happens.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking about the game, so well, credit to Indiana.
Yeah.
Gave them very little chance. A team that you were never really high on this year. I was probably higher on them, but certainly not to the heights that they got to last year. Another program that will have to kind of move into a transition role. Terry Morin isn't going anywhere, but mm-hmm. Mackenzie Holmes is gone. The last 2 years, they've lost arguably the two best players in program history, with Grace Berger leaving last year. But Holmes, a two-time All-American, one of the more efficient players that we've seen, frankly, ever among mm-hmm. bigs. So now let's see what Indiana can do as they try to maintain the status of a top 15, top 10 program.
Yeah, agreed. I think a big, like you said, Berger last year, now Holmes. So there's a lot of big shoes to fill there. I think they bring back a lot of this team outside of Holmes, but still, obviously, she's just such a huge piece of what they've done.
Right, she's the bedrock. Here are the players to average over 19.5 points per game and shoot 65% or better in a single season. That was a whole season, twice. Mm-hmm. Since 2010, Mackenzie Holmes and Megan Gustafson. That's it.
Yep.
Players who didn't do that, which I only went back to 2010, but I looked it up. Lisa Leslie, Tina Thompson, Cheryl Miller, Cheryl Swoops, Tina Charles, Nafisa Collier, Rebecca Lobo, Brittany Griner, Simone Augustus, Sylvia Fowles, Asia Wilson, Aaliyah Boston. None of them did what Mackenzie Holmes did statistically. I'm not saying she's better. I'm just saying mm-hmm. statistically.
Right.
None of them were as efficient as Mackenzie Holmes was and that productive. In a one-year stretch, let alone a two-year stretch. So Indiana technically went one game further than they did last year after getting bounced in the second round. Oregon State lost to South Carolina in the Elite Eight. I don't know where the Beavers go from here. They and Washington State, of course, are just kind of stuck in purgatory. They move to the WCC next year. Gonzaga, obviously a good WCC team. That's it. Talia von Olhoffen announced she's using her grad year to transfer, so she's in the portal. Reagan Beers is only a junior next year. I don't know if they'll be fine probably for next year. Beyond that, a lot of questions. And none of it's their fault.
Right. It's just, I think, a unfortunate situation, right? Like going from the Pac-12 to the WCC is a big step back. Hopefully you can keep a lot of your players for now and keep going and the WCCC, but yeah, I mean, recruiting is a lot more difficult all of a sudden, and it's definitely going to be a challenge.
Scott Ruick, I've seen, has been loosely rumored, like, you know, every mm-hmm. every coach who won a bunch of games that isn't, you know, Dawn Staley and Kim Mulkey and Gino Auriemma is going to be right. linked to these outside open jobs. Ruick is an Oregon guy, so you'd think he'd stay home. I'm curious, though.
Should Oregon make a coaching change? Another Oregon school should maybe make a coaching change.
I feel like that would have happened by now.
I know. But
yeah, but just it's not fair for a program that is, they missed the tournament last year. This is an Oregon State program that like every year seemingly is a 4 seed, a 5 seed. This year they were a 3 seed, like very good, 25-30 wins every year, and through no fault of their own, because they're in Corvallis and someone decided their football team wasn't good enough. The women's basketball program faces a lot of questions moving forward. Beavers, however, in the Sweet 16 did craziest wild box score in a win over Notre Dame. What were your takeaways from just a, I don't know what the heck to call it.
Yeah, it was fascinating. I don't think I've ever seen a team turn over the ball 26 times and still win a game. Period.
When the other team turned it over 5 times.
Right. And then especially at like a Sweet 16 level, we're not talking about you turn the ball over 26 times in like your season opener against East-West Nothing State. Like it's a Sweet 16 game. But yeah, they just shot, when they actually got a shot off, they shot the ball so well. And that's what really, really kept them in it. But.
Right. I mean, if you turn the ball over 21 more times than your opponent, you lose 99% of the time. But also, when you shoot 60% and Notre Dame shoots 35% and you're plus 18 on the glass, like you were supposed to win that game by 20 points 95% of the time. So
right.
It was very weird. Hannah Hidalgo really struggled. What did you make of the nose ring thing? Like, obviously, if we're just making up rules now in the Sweet 16,
right?
Cool, but like, yeah, what did you make? Because she was out for what, like half of a quarter?
Yeah, I have no idea how nose rings work, because I would assume you could just like take it out, look at your ring.
I was going to ask you.
Clearly, that's not the case. So that was confusing to me, because I'm like, if I had to take my earrings out, it would take me 5 seconds. So like, she probably, I don't understand. Yeah, I mean, I guess it is a rule. I think the timing of when they chose to enforce it is weird. Like, why, if it's going to be a rule, why not just say something before the game? Like, why are you telling her that it needs to come out in the, like, end of the first quarter?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, they should have said something before the game. It's, I don't really have a problem with them saying, like, this is a rule and we need to enforce it. Like, I just think you should have done it before the game if you're going to do it.
Right, or at any point in the last 30-some-odd games.
Right, yeah, that too.
Yeah. From an on-court standpoint, she really struggled, 4 of 17. She only had one field goal until well into the fourth quarter. This could be, I'm not saying she's as good as Diana Taurasi, but this could be her Taurasi moment. If you remember, how old were you in 2001?
6.
You probably don't remember.
Yeah.
I wasn't much older, but still. Taurasi went 1 of 15 in the Final Four as a freshman, as the Huskies blew a lead and lost to Neil Ivey and Notre Dame. And then she said they'd never lose another tournament game while she was there. She was right. Not saying Notre Dame's going to go out and win the next 3 championships. But, you know, Taurasi used that 1 of 15 as like, I remember that. Hidalgo can take that 4 of 17 and go, I remember how I played in the Elite Eight or the Sweet 16, and how if I was just a little bit better, like they, you know, not like they got blown out as a close game. And she can use that motivation for a team that I don't think they'll be preseason number one. That's probably South Carolina. Irish are going to be a title favorite next year with what they have coming back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're going to be very, very good. Obviously, Olivia Miles plus Hannah Hidalgo, is everyone is ecstatic to watch that. But
Sony, I forget. Citron was really
good. Yeah, Citron is coming back too. She's really good. I think the question marks is for them is the front court. They got to get something in the front court to be a true title favorite, I think.
Maddie Westbeld has not announced her decision.
Right. So she could come back. But she's still, I think, undersized in your front court. Like, I think if they're truly going to be a title favorite next year, they probably need to pick up someone there. And I don't know who they have been coming in recruiting-wise, too, so maybe they have someone coming in. But
they have a 6'4 post coming in who is the number 5 overall recruit, Katarina Koval.
Well, that should solve that problem.
That should, in theory, now, not all, you know, not right. All top 5, top 10 recruits work out, some better than others. The group that is currently seniors, those all worked out because the top 5 recruits were in some order. Beckers, Brink, Clark, Cardoso, and I don't remember the 5th one, but she's very, very good.
Yeah.
But so, you know, some recruiting classes work out great. And for Notre Dame's sake, you hope they do as well. That is your Albany 1 breakdown. South Carolina makes the Final 4, which again, it seems like, yeah, ho-hum, they're there again. They're undefeated. They're number one. They've been number one since the second week of the year. Again, they replaced 5 starters from last year. Boston, Cook, and Beal went to the WNBA. Kara Fletcher, Victoria Saxton graduated. They had a 6th player off the bench, Letitia Amihir. That was a top 10 WNBA pick. And yet here they are, 36-0, 2 wins away from an undefeated season. Like, it's obscene.
Yeah, no, it's incredible, and that shouldn't get lost in the shuffle of the fact that, yes, because they've been undefeated all season and really since the first week, this has felt a little bit inevitable, but agreed. Like, it's just really impressive what Dawn Staley has done with such a shift in the program this year, and still they're right back where they were.
And they lose. Camilla Cardoso is not going to use her extra year. She announced she's off to the WNBA after this
right
year.
Right at the start of the Iowa game. Such interesting timing.
I noticed that, too. There was some interesting timing of things this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did notice that. I'm sure.
She probably wasn't even thinking about it. It was probably just like, I want to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to do this before the Final Four starts, and let me just do it today.
Yeah. But I know there's a lot of like Angel Reese, Camilla Cardoso, like discourse. Yeah. So, yes, it's probably just adding to it. I'll give her the benefit of the doubt and say,
right,
unbeknownst to her, but. Yeah, I had noticed that as well. Our podcast brought to you by the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame. Don't miss your chance to be a part of women's basketball history. April 27th, the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame will be hosting its 25th anniversary induction loaded with stars, honoring Simone Augustus, Rita Gayle Easterling, Taj McWilliams Franklin, Maya Moore Irons, Sue Phillips, Violet Palmer, and Rooney Scovel, all for their achievements in women's basketball. The ceremony at the Tennessee Theater, Saturday, April 27th in Knoxville. Sponsorship packages and individual tickets still available. For more information, visit WBHOF.com or call 865-633-9000. So that's your Albany side. South Carolina is on the left side of the bracket. Iowa is on the right side. So let's move to Portland. Start with Portland 4, the team that's probably the least expected to be there. NC State, unranked in the preseason. I went back and listened to our preseason podcast. Among the ACC teams we talked about, obviously we talked about, you know, Virginia Tech, North Carolina, Louisville. We talked about Florida State, and we did not talk about the NC State Wolfpack. And here they are after Isaiah James. I said last week, the home version of Isaiah James needed to travel to Portland. Boy, did it.
Yeah, she just lit up both teams from three, Stanford, and then especially against Texas. That first half against Texas, what, she was 5 of 6 from three in that first half. Just insane.
Yeah, at home this year, she shot 40% from deep. On the road, she shot 21%. So the right version of James showed up. They were out-rebounded by Texas by 13. They did win the turnover battle. So if you take care of the basketball, you outscore your opponent by 24 from beyond the arc, and they shot 14 more free throws. Never felt great about 1C Texas compared to some of the others, right. But, I mean, I picked NC State to lose in the second round at home to Tennessee. So
same.
Kudos to an NC State team that's knocked on the door a bunch with Westmore, and they finally are able to break through and get to the Final Four.
Yeah, agreed. I think this is a really big step for that program, and maybe in not the year that it was expected to happen. I think, you know, a couple of years ago when they lost to UConn in Bridgeport, and obviously plenty of people have things to say about that, but like that was the year that everyone kind of thought they could do it, but they get here this year. It's a huge step for NC State.
We've talked about a couple of teams that might look at this season as a disappointment for not making it to the Final Four, and I know they were a one seed. Thought huge success for Texas this year. Huge success.
Yeah, I agree. I think when you lost Rory Harmon in December, like the expectations for this team just went so down. And then they were able to really kind of sustain, like they didn't win the Big 12 in the regular season, but they win the Big 12 championship. You make it to an Elite Eight. Like, I don't think you ask for much more for a season without your best player.
She's back. You have, you showed after, especially after Harmon went down, you have a star. Mm-hmm. In Madison Booker. So she's back. Aaliyah Moore is back. They do lose Taylor Jones, Shaylee Gonzalez, but they get a couple of top 10 recruits coming in. They got a guard and they have a forward coming in. They have another, I think, in the top 50. No surprise when they hired Vic Schaefer. You knew he'd get it cooking, especially after what he did in Starkville. But yeah, this is a Texas team that, kind of like Notre Dame, next year they're going to be there, injuries aside, expected to be at wherever the heck the Final Four is next year. That's a long way away from
Tampa.
Me.
Yeah.
Tampa. Oh, Tampa.
So someplace warmer than Cleveland, at least.
Have you seen the temperature for Cleveland?
I don't want to talk about it. I'm very upset.
It's going to be like 40s and 50s, and you think, all right, that's doable. Then you realize, oh, you're on the lake. So like add a 20-mile-an-hour wind chill to that.
Right, yeah. It's freezing.
We have to talk. This has been a positive show to this point, largely. The storyline of NC State Texas, frankly, wasn't the game.
I like rolling my eyes to that. I don't even want to talk about it because it's just so embarrassing for the NCAA. How do you mess up the 3-point lines? When they started saying it, or like I started seeing it on Twitter as that game was starting, I like ran out of the Albany game to go watch that game. And then I started seeing Twitter things about the 3-point line. And I'm just like, this has to be a joke. Like, someone's just like, oh, the angle, camera angle's funny. And then I was like, no, this is real. They literally played 4 Sweet 16 games and an Elite game on an incorrectly measured court. Like, how does that happen?
Yeah, and, you know, from a player standpoint, and frankly, like a referee standpoint, anyone who's there, I don't think to check the 3-point line, but then you see like the zoomed out photos and it's like, holy crap. Like, how did everyone miss this? Like, it's obvious when it's pointed out. Another one. Tell me the NCAA doesn't care about the women's tournament.
Like, it just would never happen on the men's side.
Never. Million years. Because every single sign screams like blinking neon lights, arrows, winning that the NCAA still could not care less about the women's tournament. Like the three-point line, the Chattanooga NC State referee thing, the Utah incident, which, yeah, not their fault that they were racial slurs were shouted, but they put them in the situation by putting them across state lines. The nose ring thing where we're just randomly enforcing rules, the weight room in 2021, the use of the term March Madness not being used until last year. Like the NCAA, like they don't care. It seems like they don't care.
Yeah, I don't know how you talk it up to anything else. Like, it's embarrassing. Like, on the biggest stage. And, like, think about the fact that, like, how well these games have drawn over the last weekend and you still don't care. Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
I mean, the NCAA wouldn't even separate women's basketball from the other 30-some-odd championships in the ESPN deal.
Yeah.
Like, if you're not sports media person, college football obviously has its own media deal. Men's basketball tournament has its own deal with CBS and Turner. Well, women's basketball for forever was lumped in with swimming and diving and baseball and softball and every NCAA sport you can think of that isn't football and men's basketball. They chose not to separate it this year. The men's tournament will bring in $1 billion every year for the NCAA. The women's tournament will bring in $115 million. Am I saying the women's tournament is as valuable as the men? No, not there. Yet, is it 10% as valuable? The ratings say no.
Right.
Like the NCAA literally can't even give itself more free money by just saying, yeah, we're going to sell the women's tournament separately. It's free money.
I just don't understand it. It makes
every
sense.
Step that these players and these coaches and these programs take, like they have to fight in ways that like it would never happen on the men's side. Hell, the LA Times column. Like
so
great Sweet 16 matchup between LSU and UCLA, and we're talking about racist comments from a guy who probably hasn't watched a single second of women's basketball.
Yeah, it's disappointing. Obviously, it's so disappointing.
So, NC State, frankly, the game wasn't really that close. I know Texas, you know, kind of made a run there late and made the final respectable. NC State, I don't think, was ever going to lose. After they beat Stanford in the Sweet 16, and I was wrong again, shockingly. Never been wrong before. I thought Cameron Brink, like, there's no way she puts up another meh game.
Agreed. I had the same 23 thought.
23 minutes, she fouled out.
Yeah, I was like, after that Iowa State game, she's going to come out and have a huge game, and they're probably going to win this. And, yeah, fouls out again. Just a sad way, in my opinion, for her to end her college career, like such a great college career, and then to go out with back-to-back games falling out, which hasn't really been that big of an issue for her this season, and then in the most important time it was.
Yeah, and they got away with it in the second round because Kiki Iriathan was otherworldly.
Right.
This time, she was only very good. She had 26 and 10. She apparently needed to be otherworldly again. It was another year where they just never felt like the really, really good power that they could have been, and something felt like it was missing. And you know, in all honesty, it seemed like that something missing was in the backcourt. I don't think it was ever quite good enough.
Yeah, it feels like just for the last few years, they've really struggled like that point guard position and just figuring out the guard rotation. And then especially since the Hull twins have left, it's just like the backcourt is just lacking.
Right, and Haley Jones isn't, you know, your classic true point guard.
Yeah, true. Technically,
point forward.
Yeah, but, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Hannah Jump was fine again. She's now gone. They're not going to collapse into the face of the earth, but Brink is gone. Iriathan will be back. She'll be the focal point. Talana Lapolo needs to undergo her Raven Johnson era, where she doesn't need to light it up, but she needs to score some. They don't have any high-end recruits coming in. They have a couple ranked in the 40s. They have another top 100 kid. Shockingly, two of them are tall. Hard to get transfers in academically, although you have some good Ivy Leaguers hanging around out there. Moving to the ACC, the travel will become brutal. I'm intrigued again. Probably not next year. There'll be a top 10 team. They'll threaten right away in the ACC. I'm interested beyond, especially as obviously, you know, Tara Vanderveer, her numbers, her days are, you know, we're in the twilight of her career, however long that is.
Yeah, I think it's a tough job to fill when Tara decides that she's done, and it's going to be, I think it's a tough role to step into because obviously the expectations are going to be sky high, but then you're in this new situation where you're traveling across the country every week. Like, that's a lot. You've got huge academic shoes that have to be filled by these players too. And that's a tough situation to be in recruiting wise and in the world of the transfer portal transfer wise too.
Yeah. So the 2021 national champs, 22. Mm-hmm. Whatever 2 years ago was, they won.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, whatever year it was. Second round exit last year, Sweet 16 exit this year. The other Sweet 16 game, Yad Gonzaga in the Final Four. You didn't feel great about it, and mm-hmm. yeah, Zags just Texas was bigger and stronger.
Yeah, and Gonzaga didn't shoot the ball well from three either, and that's like they needed to shoot the ball well from three to win the game.
No, Trunk sisters are now gone. Yvonne Ejim is back. They'll probably win 30 games again next year because that's what they do, even though they have some pieces to reload. And schedule got a little harder because mm-hmm. they'll play Oregon State probably once, if not twice. They'll play Washington State a couple of times. Although they always scheduled Pac-12 schools right. to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, I think if like Oregon State's going to survive in the WCC, it's like it's a Gonzaga game plan. You just play half of the Pac-12 schools and you're not in conference, and then it's not as bad.
Yes, so NC State finally breaks through under Wes Moore, a very good program for a very long time. They make the Final Four.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Brings us to Portland 3, where on paper you go, oh, yeah, UConn made the Final Four. Great. They make it every year. They lost five players to season-ending injuries. AZ Fudd is All-American caliber. Aubrey Griffin might be the most impactful. A fringe starter, 25-minute player in Caroline Ducharme. And then a couple of reserve forwards, Jonna El-Alfi and Ayanna Patterson, to a front court that doesn't have depth. Programs die. Seasons end in that situation. And here the Huskies are. It's one of Geno's best coaching jobs, which you're saying something about a man who's won 1,200 games and 11 national titles.
Yeah, agreed. I think they've gotten some credit for it in the last couple of days, but yeah, I think it has kind of flown under the radar, like what this team has accomplished despite of all that, and to be back in the Final Four. Quite frankly, I don't know that. Like, I thought they got good matchups in this region, but I still like would have absolutely not been shocked if they just fell short in the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight because they just didn't have enough. And I think for this team in the state that it's in to get to the Final Four is obviously one of a huge testament to Geno and just how good of a coach he is, which people seem to have forgotten a little bit over the last few years because they haven't won a national championship. And then, I mean, also to just how great Paige Beckers is too, because she is a huge piece of why this year's team is in the Final Four versus last year's team fell short in a Sweet 16.
Yes, last year they had the same number of season-ending injuries. The difference was one of them was named Paige Beckers.
Right, exactly.
And this year it isn't. Well, imagine, this is not a perfect comparison, but imagine if South Carolina lost Bree Hall, Ashlyn Watkins, Sanaya Fagan, Chloe Kitts, and Tessa Johnson. They may not, they probably don't make the Final Four. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to compare the programs. That's just the only other program that I could think of where who has five players who play off the bench, let alone, are impactful. It's wild that they're there. And yes, they got, a little bit of luck. Did I think they would beat UCLA or LSU or Iowa or even, one seeds? Or if they were put in Albany, would they have beaten South Carolina? No. Mm-hmm. Part of it was the matchups. Duke pulled the upset in the second round. They didn't have to play Ohio State. But still, the fact that they're there, it's nothing short of incredible. The Ice Brady game. Paige Beckers gets the star, is the star here. Ice Brady, 8 points, which 8 points off the bench for UConn. It's like finding gold.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought her and also Kaden Samuels too, even in the first half, she only had 3 points, but I just thought for someone that has played 7 minutes in this tournament all in their blowout first game to come in and like not look lost out there was just impressive. But she played well too. But yeah, Ice Brady I think was the difference maker for this team. Like, you knew Paige was gonna be great. You knew Aaliyah was gonna be really good, but Ice Brady having that game is I think what made the difference for them. And I kind of said this going into the game, like the game was billed as Paige versus Juju. It was two through five that was going to decide who won the game. And Ice Brady stepping up was huge. And quite frankly, if Aaliyah Edwards doesn't break her nose in the Big East tournament and Ice Brady doesn't have to play 40 minutes a game all of a sudden, I don't know that they go to Cleveland.
That's a good point. USC is probably kicking itself because Rhea Marshall, Kayla Padilla, and Caitlin Davis were outscored by Nika Mule, Ice Brady, and Caden Samuels, 19-18. And that's, I mean, like, UConn couldn't that's win any difference. Other way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the difference. And that no Husky fouled out is a damn miracle. KK Arnold played with four fouls for the fourth quarter. Nika Mule played with four fouls for the last 12 minutes.
Yeah, that Nika didn't fall out in that game is extremely. When she got her fourth, I was like, oh boy. But a lot of credit to her because I think we've seen her foul out so many times in her career to be able to hang on when they needed it.
Yeah. USC, just like Texas, just the start.
Yeah.
Wonderful year for the Trojans. Obviously, you know, you fell. You were so close to the Final Four. This is just the start for a program that I think is, if they're not there next year, like, they're going to be there multiple times. And if you gave me right now the next 5 years, they'll go to three Final Fours probably.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're absolutely on the path back there. Clearly have made huge strides this year. Juju is very clearly the real deal. And I'm excited to see what they do next year. And we'll be pretty surprised if we aren't talking about them as a Final Four team next year.
Yeah, I mean, she's a star player, national player of the year caliber right now as a freshman. If you're going to be nitpicky, find a way to be a little more efficient offensively or impact the game offensively in other ways if her shot isn't falling. She's good defensively, impactful there. Again, that's like super nitpicky. They have three top 30 recruits coming in. I think Padilla can come back. Mackenzie Forbes cannot.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, so they'll be there next year. Add them to the list. Preseason top five, high expectations, and all well-deserved. Sweet 16. Trojans almost didn't get there because Baylor. Credit to Baylor. Kind of like Indiana. Yeah. We just never high on them all year, and they just wouldn't go away. Did you watch this game at all?
I did watch it. And, yeah, they shot the ball really well, especially in the second half. Like, I was impressed. I think I said it on Twitter. I was like, I haven't been impressed with this team since like January, but I was impressed. I didn't think they would give USC a game and they did. So I think that's huge.
Perfectly acceptable year for Baylor. Preseason 19, they finished in the Sweet 16. The backcourt, they lose Sarah Andrews, but Little Paige Bugs, Jada Walker, Fontelroy are back. They'll have to replace the front court, so they may have to go portaling. Is this what Baylor is? I know Nikki Collin got very upset about the Mulkey column and, you know, saying she left the cupboard was bare or Baylor was nothing, blah, blah, blah. And clearly it isn't. Is this a ceiling? Like, how much higher can you think they can get back to the heights that they were at a decade ago?
I think that's hard. I think being in the Big 12, that's hard in general. I think like that Mulkey could do that in the Big 12 was a testament to her as a coach. But I think a Sweet 16 kind of every year type team is a really good place to be and probably where this team hangs out.
Right, like baseline Sweet 16, occasional year where you're making the Elite Eight in the Final Four, competing for a national title. That's reasonable. And then other Sweet 16 game. Of all the games this weekend, UConn-Duke was one of them.
I don't even want to talk about it.
Nice year for Duke.
Yeah.
Both them and the Huskies and North Carolina are in the Sarah Strong sweepstakes. She's the number one recruit in the country, and she is uncommitted at this point. Now, we'll talk Final Four preview after this as we're done talking about the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. But nice segue, because we asked last week if Tennessee would move on from Kelly Harper. I didn't think they would. They did. Carol Lawson, come on down.
I mean, I think that would have to be one of their first calls. You would expect, seeing what she's done at Duke. I think there's been some stuff floating around on the internet that, you know, there aren't many jobs that she would leave Duke for. This is probably the one that's available. So, yeah, I think you call Carol Lawson. I mean, it's a huge job, but it's also, I don't know, I feel like for someone to take it that's already in a good position, it's a job that very clearly comes with really high expectations that are hard to meet.
Harper coached four tournaments because she coached a fifth year, but there's no tournament. Four tournaments, two Sweet 16s, and she got fired. So that is your baseline. Yeah. The Sweet 16 isn't good enough. Lawson has two top 20 recruits coming in. Again, could make it three if Sarah Strong commits to Durham. Would she leave now, even though, you know, it's Tennessee, it's her alma mater, I get all that. Would she leave now, having spent 3 years building Duke to a point where they can get to the Sweet 16, and next year they can probably, well, certainly make a run to go further?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it probably comes down to what she wants, but if you want to coach at Tennessee eventually, like, yeah, this is probably the time to take the job, but you've also built something at Duke that's really good, and the expectations at Duke aren't so heavy, right? Like, her making the Sweet 16 is probably ahead of where they thought this program would be
yeah.
3 years into her career there, or her tenure there. So, I don't know. It just comes with a little bit more grace, and I think Tennessee is probably going to have a hard time finding someone that's already successful where they're at in a Power 5 school and has built something to take the job.
I know nothing. This is just purely off the dome. Danny White is Tennessee's athletic director. I'd imagine he is saying today, right now, with Duke off a Sweet 16 run, if Kara Lawson signs an extension, that buyout goes up next year. So if I make a move now, that buyout is probably less, and I can go get her now. That's my thought of why he would make the move now, because he wants Kara Lawson, and now is the time to do it. Yeah. Again, this is just like purely speculative. Sense. I don't know anything. This is just my, again, armchair psychology.
Yeah.
Now, the other question here is, should Tennessee look outside the family? Like, they tried with Holly Warlick. It didn't work. Kelly Jolly, the player, was on three national championship teams at Tennessee, and they felt it wasn't working. Should they go outside the family? Which is hard to do.
Yeah, it's hard to do. I think if you don't get Kara, you definitely need to go outside the family. I think, like, that's a in the family choice that makes sense. But maybe you do, because it clearly hasn't worked so far.
Some names that I saw thrown out there, like, I saw Neil Ivey. She's not leaving her alma mater, yeah. Notre Dame, especially with what they have coming back next year. Lindsey Gottlieb, why would she leave USC? Yeah. Corey Close is a West Coast person. Again, why are these people, like, why would they leave their
current Why jobs? Would you leave a school in Southern California to go to coach in Knoxville? No offense, but, like, you have a good job in LA. Come on.
I saw some across Jeff Walls, that star, maybe not quite as bright as it was a few years ago. I do love Jeff Walls. That'd be interesting. Scott Rook, we mentioned him. He's an Oregon guy. Frankly, the best coach in the state is 72 years old. Rick Insull at Middle Tennessee, but he's 72. J.R. Payne at Colorado. She's from Tennessee. She's been the head coach in Boulder since 2016, and she's been to two Sweet 16s. You just fired a coach for doing that.
All right.
So is she splashy enough? And the other part of this is, can we talk about the roster that you're inheriting?
Not, right. Like Rekia it's a Jackson, tough place to come into.
She'll be a top three WNBA draft pick. Jewel Spears said she's coming back the day before the afternoon they fired Harper. Maybe she still does come back. They have a lone top 100 recruit who's already on campus. Kanaya Boyd was an early enrollee. Sarah Puckett's okay. That cupboard's bare in a conference where it's South Carolina and it's LSU. It's Texas next year. Oklahoma's pretty good. You have a bunch of 7, 8, 9 seeds in the SEC that you're fighting against. Like, the name is big. The expectations are big. Next year, they may miss the tournament.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a really tough situation for someone to come into. And that's why, I don't know. I feel like they could have trouble getting home. Obviously, it's a huge job. It's a huge profile job. But if you're already in a good situation, I don't know that you leave a good situation in Power 5 money already for that situation.
Right. So, in theory, you have to go to the smaller ranks, which... fans, if you let fans make decisions, you're in trouble. But just the reaction to a non-big name, I feel like wouldn't go over well.
Yeah, agreed.
But that might be what they have to do. So that's your Tennessee talk, even though they got bounced a week ago. But that was one of the bigger stories of the week, non-basketball, or off the court, I should say. The other non-basketball one we got mad about. So that leaves us 4 teams left. Final 4, game 1 Friday. South Carolina, NC State. Gamecocks, heavy favorites, as you might imagine. They'll probably be heavy favorites if they win, regardless of who they would see on Sunday. If South, like, this is your basic analysis. If South Carolina plays to 85% of its capability, it wins. And the same can be said on Sunday. Like, I think that's as simple as that.
Agreed. I think we saw them get challenged these last couple of games. So, like, could someone upset them? Absolutely. But I agree. Yeah. I think with their depth, if they play really well, like, yeah, they probably win.
They're going to control the paint. It's what they do, especially with the three teams they're playing. They could play. They will control the paint. If they make six or seven threes, if they have like 12 or fewer turnovers, you're not going to beat them. You need a little bit of luck. Now, how does NC State win? Well, first of all, Isaiah James making six or seven threes, that's a good start. River Baldwin probably has to stay out of foul trouble. She only played 21 minutes in the Elite Eight. Wolfpack were out-rebounded by Texas handily, but they made up for it in free throws and threes. Is that the start?
Yeah, I think that's a huge start. I think if you look at South Carolina's, like, some of their closer games this year, like, Indiana made 13 threes. Oregon State made eight threes. Tennessee in that game made eight threes. So, yeah, you got to make threes. Like, if you're going to have a chance, you got to make threes. If you start straining threes for twos, you've got a little bit of a shot.
Right, and you have to hope South Carolina shoots it 4 of 20 right. from three like they did in the Elite Eight, which is in their bag. Also in their bag, they can turn the ball over 15, 16-plus times. We've seen that recently. So, like, it's not undoable. Tina Pau-Pau struggling a little bit shooting. It's like she was around 50% in the regular season. She's way down in the postseason. Bree Hall hasn't really been a big scorer since mid-February. Tessa Johnson's helped made up for it. But you know, part of it is, like, being honest, you need the Gamecocks to struggle. Whether it's your fault they struggle or they're just having an off night. And then from the Gamecocks standpoint, they need to take away a former player, Sanaya Rivers. If you find anything that they struggle with, relatively speaking, long, athletic, quick wings, like Rekia Jackson had a great year three times against South Carolina. Rivers downhill, get to the basket, probably have to stop her. And again, this isn't a prolific three-point shooting team at NC State. James just got hot. If you just don't let James and Madison Hayes or Mimi Collins get hot, that's, again, good start for South Carolina.
Yeah, agreed.
Do you think this is close?
If James is as hot as she was in this weekend, then yes. Otherwise, no.
By close, I don't want to, like, I don't think South Carolina is going to win by 30. I think they probably win by 15 or 16 in a game that is never really in doubt at any point in time. But, I mean, NC State proved me wrong. Three times. What's one more?
Exactly.
Game two on Friday. Iowa-UConn. Did you know that Caitlin Clark wanted to go to UConn, but they didn't recruit her? I haven't heard that before.
That's the new thing. I feel like the explanation for it is like, well, yeah, they wanted Paige Becker, so like we're going to recruit two top five point guards out of the same class. That wouldn't really make any sense, but whatever.
They've also played twice since Caitlin Clark and Paige Becker's been in college. So like this isn't new. I'm not touching the Caitlin Clark versus Paige Becker's thing. Clark would go number one to the Fever this year if Paige declared. I think Becker's is more well-rounded, especially defensively. They're both incredible. Don't at me. I don't want to hear it.
Right. Exactly.
Game plan. Iowa wins. How does Iowa win this game? Is it two more players besides Caitlin Clark get 15 plus, just like a Falter and Martin or Stolke or whomever?
Yeah, I think it has to be that. I think Caitlin Clark cannot win this game on her own. Like, especially when you have a player like Paige Becker's on the other side. I think a lot of it is, again, when you looked at, like, the UConn-USC game, right, it was, like, all Paige versus Juju, but, like, it's the other players that decide it. And, I mean, I don't think this one's quite the same because Clark is going to have more points than Paige Becker's most likely in this game, but I still think it's the other players.
If she doesn't, Iowa's probably losing.
Yes, if she doesn't have more points than Paige Becker's, then, yeah, UConn will be winning the game most likely. But yeah, I think Iowa needs, it doesn't have to be everyone, but there's got to be probably at least two that are in double figures other than Caitlin Clark. And I think that's probably what UConn's going to try to take away. Like, you're not going to stop Clark, but you're going to try to take away everyone else.
If a Falter, Martin Stolke, Marshall, whomever, if they combine for 30 points, like two of them do, like they did in the Elite Eight, I don't think UConn can keep up for 40 minutes. At that offensive pace. Like, you're right. This isn't Caitlin Clark versus Paige Beckers. They'll get theirs. The third best player on the floor is Aaliyah Edwards, comfortably. But if the fourth, fifth, and sixth best players are all Hawkeyes,
Yeah.
Which they could be, like, advantage Iowa. If that trio of Falter, Martin, and Stolke outplays Mule, Arnold, and Shade, UConn's in trouble. Also, if UConn gets in foul trouble, the Huskies are in trouble.
Right.
Now, UConn will win if they repeat same thing, that secondary scoring option?
Yeah, exactly. I think Paige is going to get hers. I would expect that Aaliyah gets hers in this one, too. I don't think Iowa's post-defense has been anything to write home about. So, like, Aaliyah's going to get hers, but you're right, they need the third option, and I don't know who that is, and I think that's the big question mark, is who is that? Ashlyn Shade was very clearly that first option in the first weekend. She really struggled last weekend, but someone's going to have to be that third scoring option.
I also think, kind of like NC State needs South Carolina to play poorly, I think part of you has to hope it's an off-shooting night for Iowa. It's the night that they shoot 8 of 32 from 3 instead of 12 of 32. Syracuse made 13 threes, and it was close. Duke shot 4 of 19, and a lot of them were open. USC, same thing. They were 9 of 31, just an off-shooting day. A lot of them are open. Iowa's going to get open threes. That's what they do. UConn's defense, I know they're highly ranked. This is the worst UConn defense of my lifetime, in my opinion. If those open threes fall, Hawkeyes win. If they don't, UConn's got a shot. And that's very little to do with how UConn defends. It's a matter of it's shot making, in my opinion.
Yeah. I don't know. I think they can, I think UConn can keep up offensively because of Paige and because of Aaliyah. Like, I think Aaliyah's going to be able to get what Aaliyah wants in the post. So if they feed her, like, I don't know that it's just the shot making. I still think it comes down more to that third option than the shot making.
I will say the Iowa defense, once, now part of it is Angel Reese got hurt and she clearly wasn't the same player. Like, after that first quarter, LSU forgot how to make layups.
Yeah.
That broadcast says after the first quarter, they went 13 of 32 on what it considered layups.
Yeah.
Part of that, I think part of that's credit to the Iowa D. Like, yeah. Kind of like South Carolina last year in the Final Four. They're not going to be great one-on-one post defenders. They don't have the size for it. But if they pack it in, and dare KK Arnold and Ashlyn Shea to make threes on kickouts, I think Lisa Bluter can live with that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what, but then, like, you also have a player like Shade that can shoot the three. So if she shoots the three, then that you pay on that. So yeah, it'll be, they might have to adjust during the game based on who's having what kind of night.
Yeah. So that leaves us four potentials to wrap this up. National championship games. Frankly, I think the least intriguing would be South Carolina UConn. We saw this. It was in Columbia, so that, you know, the home court advantage. Huskies never really in it. Beckers and Edwards would have to play out of their minds. And then Shade, Arnold, and Mule would have to combine for 20 to 25 points. I think the Huskies to have any semblance of a chance. In other words, score 75 on South Carolina's defense, which is, in theory, doable. Awfully hard. Do you see it? Like, I don't think it would be that dramatic.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I feel like just like the overall like consensus for this weekend is right. Like, South Carolina probably needs to beat itself for someone else to win the championship. Could it happen? Absolutely. But yeah, I think like when you're talking about scenarios to beat South Carolina, like the number one thing is South Carolina beats itself, and then like the other team, whoever plays them, Iowa or UConn, has to, you know, hit threes and do the other things to pull off the win.
We don't have to say how NC State would beat South Carolina, but just going down the list. NC State, Iowa, that'd be an interesting one.
It would be.
West Virginia game plan of maybe just grinding them down, try to slow the pace a little bit. Like, Wolfpack have the bodies to throw at people. If River Baldwin stays close to the basket, cool. But everyone else, like, won't be uncomfortable with a, you know, with Iowa spreading the floor. I think that would be an interesting matchup.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a fun one. Probably not an expected one, but a fun one.
We're just going through. Yeah, all four scenarios.
I know. It could all, anything could happen. That's how the Final Four works. So, yeah, I mean, like you said, they can throw a lot of bodies at people. They've had the depth all season, so I think that's what makes this NC State team so intriguing, is like they've got a lot of different options that can make it work.
NC State UConn would be a rematch from very early in November, second game of the year. UConn in that one, gave up 92 points, had no answers for a penetrating Saniya Rivers, but a very different UConn team. Right. If you look at the box score, AZ Fudd, Caroline Ducharme started. Caden Samuels played 23 minutes. KK Arnold just 12. Ashley Jay didn't play in that game. So it's really hard to take anything from it aside from UConn has struggled with fast guards who get to the rim all year.
Right.
So expect, I mean, Rivers is exactly that.
Right, exactly. They're going to have trouble with Rivers. And I feel like the rematch of it would obviously make it like a fun narrative. But like you said, like that game, like it's just a, it feels like it wasn't even the season because it's just a totally different UConn team than the one that there is now.
Yeah, and that leaves us with the one that the executives are praying for.
Yeah.
South Carolina, Iowa.
It's also a rematch of last year.
Go back to last year. Right, we talked about it a little while ago. How did the Hawkeyes win? They only made 7 threes in the win, which is wild when you consider like that South Carolina team. You figured you need to make 10, 12. They got out-rebounded by 24. They took 20 fewer shots. But just like LSU on Monday, they packed the paint. They made life difficult enough for the bigs without fouling, missed a bunch of layups. Gamecocks 4 of 20 from 3. Last year, that wasn't really luck. This year, asking him to do 4 of 20 again is probably a little ambitious, but it's doable. And, I mean, I think you just have to replicate that.
Right.
And probably make, you know, they probably want to make more than 7 threes. But I think that's your game plan. It's a replica of last year.
Yeah, I agree. I think you probably take a pretty similar strategy to last year, and then you need Clark to go off. Like that's the answer for Iowa in pretty much every game, right? Like if Clark has an off night, which he rarely does, but like that it's hard to win. But you need Clark to have a big night, and then you need two of the other 5-6 players you play in rotation to have a big night too.
Yeah, and the South Carolina side, if you're looking for revenge, well, we only shot 4 of 20 from 3. Sorry, so if 4 goes to 6, well, again, Hawkeyes only made 7. So right. That 7 can easily become 10. So that could basically cancel each other out. Still, you said it, I think, accurately. Like, South Carolina controls its destiny. How it plays will ultimately determine who cuts down the nets, because I just have a hard time seeing anyone other than the Gamecocks cutting down the nets, which I said that last year. And frankly, last year's team might be more imposing and intimidating than this year's team because they've looked vulnerable in the last month. But 36-0 is 36-0, and they've done it since the first game of the year.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I agree. Like, I'm going to say it, but if you asked me last year if Iowa could beat South Carolina, I would have told you, like, no chance, and it might not even be close. So anything can happen.
Big weekend coming up. This is year 2 of our podcast. Megan and I have never met each other in person. We grew up in the same state. I'm sure we've been to games at the same time, but didn't know it. And we will meet each other. Lunch is on me one day. We'll invite Calvin Wetzel, friend of the program, and we'll have a good time. So, Megan, you go to Cleveland tonight, weather permitting.
Yeah.
What are you doing until Friday?
Media stuff all day tomorrow. And then, I don't know, maybe try to see a little bit of the city Friday morning.
Well, enjoy.
I've heard it's not much to see, but we'll see.
Yeah, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's probably what I'll do Friday morning. So
there you go. All right. Well, enjoy the Final Four, and we'll be back next week to break down everything from Cleveland. Might give you some bonus content this weekend. We'll see what it looks like, and enjoy the games.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro. Easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.